continued doing that. But all the stories originally appeared in the newspaper first as weekly serials.
Now, I know you're busy reprinting some of the old stories and some of the old books, but originally, how many different books were published?
Well, there was 11 books.
Okay.
10 of them were as hardback books, and then the last one was a paperback book that was an outgrowth of the Ralston Purina radio shows. NBC Radio out of Chicago had Secretary Hawkins on the air several times a week, and one of those stories became Ghost of Lake Tapahoe was the name of it. That became a paperback book that people would get for sending in two Ralston box tops. So it was a free book, and as it turned out, it's one of the most expensive ones to find these days.
Well, I'm amazed just how expensive any of the books are really these days when you see them in bookstores or among collector circles. All of those original printings, they bring a pretty hefty penny.
Yeah, they sure do, and it's just, I guess it's a supply and demand. They've printed somewhere between 60 and 70,000 books out of those 11, so that wasn't a whole lot of books, but they're very hard to find, and especially now with that paper dust jacket that we all throw away, that's become, in the book business, that becomes more valuable sometimes than the book itself.
I wonder if he was ever either surprised or, I guess, mildly amused, how popular his stories became.
Well, yeah, it was just surprising that it became very popular. I mean, there were at least a million members of his clubs throughout the country, and some things I read say even more than that. And as things went on, he became more and more amazed at what was going on, but it seemed to get even more popular once he retired and into the 50s, and he'd often say to me and my dad that, you know, he couldn't believe that these books were going for so many dollars and you couldn't find them anymore.
Maybe you could talk about those clubs. Now, this was kind of, I guess, this became kind of a cottage industry in that there were so many people interested in these books that they decided to form little clubs all around the country. Is that correct?
Right, yeah. Spearheaded a lot of times by the newspapers. Each newspaper or radio station that would run the secretary stories or secretary comic strips would get in line and let the children in town know that they could have their own chapter of the Secretary Hawkins Major Club. And Grandpa would go around and speak to all these people and talk to different towns and different groups of people. So it got to the point where, as I say, there were over a million members at one point, and all throughout the United States.
And the values that were kind of held within the story and the characters kind of were transposed into these clubs.
Right. Well, it's all good, clean fun, which is not the most popular thing for children these days. They want blood, guts, and action these days. But, you know, I've got one of the membership clubs here in front of me. I can tell you a couple of the rules to the club. It was all meant to build good character and good citizens and have something to do with having children believe in God and things of that nature. But number one was always be fair and square. Two is attend all meetings or give an honest excuse when absent. Tell the truth. Liar cannot be trusted. Never give up. A quitter never wins and a winner never quits. Use common sense in everything. Look before you leap. Let your mother know where you're going at all times. Things of that nature. And there are 12 rules that the children would sign off and agree to do their best to keep those rules if they joined the club.
There's certainly nothing wrong with that. That's
not at all some
great things even some of us adults can live by.
Right. And you know, one of the things you mentioned, the books, I'm sure you're aware, you've been one of the purchasers of some of the books. The club got together and made it kind of a club effort to get volunteers to retype some of the stories, and in the process of unloading a lot of the boxes that Grandpa kept, I found initially one of the extra stories called The Stonewall House that was never printed as a book, and we printed that book, and it got to be very popular. Everybody bought all the 100 books that we bought and wanted some more, so we went out and found that there were a lot more stories. We've got a total now of those 11 titles now have turned into 28 titles, and we're printing two more books this month. Actually, they're at the printer right now. We're reprinting Stoner's Boy, which we found there were 11 chapters in the newspapers that were never in the books.
I see.
So we got a lot of new material there, and some of the stories, preliminary stories before Stoner's Boy, were in the newspapers, and they were never in books as well, so we've got those coming out in book form.
In addition to the books and the serials and the stories, Secretary Hawkins was also in on the funny pages, the comic section, and also a radio program.
Right. Yeah, the comics generally ran in concurrence with the story itself, but some papers ran the comics all by themselves, and in some cases they would run every day of the week, and it followed pretty much the same storyline as the books did, but got to a lot of people that didn't like to read books. They liked to read the funny papers, and the artwork there was fantastic. The different artists that Grandpa had were just incredible people that did a lot of things with just lines of black and white.
Yeah, I think one of the artists, wasn't it Carolyn Williams' father?
That's correct.
Was his name Carl, I think, or something like
that? Carl B. Williams, Carl with two L's. And when he passed away, then another friend of Grandpa's from the newspaper, Joe Eberts, took over.
I see.
And actually, we've got Joe Eberts' granddaughter coming to the club meeting here at beginning of next month.
Very good. And the radio programs were kind of neat because he really got in on the ground floor on this new technology called radio back in the early 1920s. He was there from the beginning and eventually went national.
Right. Yeah, the 1922 was the first time he went into a radio station, and he had to be on one of those. So I think it was WSAI was the first channel that he was on, and he read his different stories, but he started out with the Milo Minute Milo stories, which were totally different than Secretary Hawkins, but that's what he started with. And you have a lot of that information and some of the old scripts and things like that in the Museum for the Voice of America, isn't that right?
That's right, that's right. And we're trying to preserve, because honestly, as you said, I mean, this was from the very beginning, 1922. It's hard to get much earlier than that, especially here in Cincinnati. So
right.
He certainly recognized a new thing. I'm sure he would have been on the cutting edge of the computer age as well.
most likely. And, you know, back in 1931, I think it was, that NBC approached him. And backed by the Ralston Purina Company, they did Secretary Hawkins nationally from the NBC radio stations in Chicago. So Grandpa would be away for the whole week and come home on the weekends.
Now, your grandfather was pretty active. He retired, what, in the 1950s or so? Is that when he roughly?
He kind of retired in 43.
Okay.
But then he decided he better go back to work and went back to the Cincinnati Enquirer and worked some more there and stayed there for, I'd say till 1966 or 7.
So maybe you and John can share some of the memories that you personally had visiting your grandfather.
Sure. Well, you know, we went there as our parents were entertainers. My dad played the piano and Mom was a singer, and they had a duo and sometimes a trio with another player, and they'd go around to hotels and nightclubs and various places and were never home. And you know how the music business goes. Sometimes you're working, sometimes you're not.
Right.
So early on, they found out they had three young boys, John, myself, and Robert F. Shulkers, the third, who maybe next time we have this radio interview next year, we'll have all three brothers. But we had a wonderful time at Grandpa's house. He was a fantastic man. John and I were just talking about today, and he reminded me of a couple of things that I've forgotten about. You know, John was, you were about in kindergarten back then, weren't you, John?
Well, I was only about five when we left Cincinnati. Up until that time, I spent a lot of time with Grandpa. Up in his room and office together, and he let me type on his old Royal typewriter that he used to type the books on, and he taught me how to play chess when I was little, and he would always be there for us. Whenever we kids came to Grandpa's house, everybody ran to Grandpa because he was always kind. He was never unhappy, never cross with us. He always took the time to teach us things, and he was just the greatest grandpa you could imagine.
Yeah.
And one thing I shared with Randy that Randy had forgotten was that Grandpa had this little tiny candy dispenser up in his room, and it had little tiny cups like you'd get a malt.